It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Dimitri, what's up, man? Guys, appreciate you all tuning in. I'm Chris Phillips. He is Dimitri Ivanis. We are SEC Unfiltered, the SEC Unfiltered Hour, which you can catch here daily on Texas Sports Unfiltered, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 4 Central Time. And again, I'm joined by Dimitri Ivanis. Dimitri, how are you, my friend, after taking a reaming by Mississippi State Twitter?
Oh, I thought you were something that happened in baseball. I was like, fine. No, but mostly okay. I mean, look, Mississippi State fans, you know, look, they're the dogs, right? They got to bark. They're not going to bite for real. Like all of the flexing of, oh, let's save this video and come back at the end of the season. Like my response to a lot of them was, yeah, I mean, I look forward to talking to you at the end of the season. I think we're probably going to be moving the goalpost on what you think success is, but good Lord.
That was hilarious. I just like, and it was one of those things to where, you know, admittedly, so I've had, Dimitri, it's a fun fact. I've had notifications cut off on Twitter for years because it obviously, our timeline stays very busy, which I'm happy about. But that was one of those that sort of got lost in the shuffle. And I think I saw like one notification and I went, and I was like, holy shit, like Dimitri's getting cooked right now. And you were like, I muted the notifications. So good on you. Very smart.
Yeah, but
very
my smart. Wife and kids and I went up to D.C. for a concert this weekend. So I at one point on Saturday, you had texted me to see if I was watching this. I told you, like, I just had to put it on mute, not because I couldn't take it, because I couldn't, like, I was driving up to D.C. I couldn't stop every 5 minutes to respond to every single tweet that I got. But look for it. College football bubble bath on SEC Unfiltered. I basically asked a question that I bet a lot of Texas fans wondered as they would look across the sideline the last few years with Oklahoma is, what makes you think Jeff Lebby is ready to lead a program? What makes you think that he is mature enough to lead a program in the sense that, like, you know, and I brought this up. Lane Kiffin has talked about this. His first job as a head coach on the college level, he basically said, look, I made the mistake of ignoring the defense and paying way too much attention to the offensive game plan instead of accepting what it meant to be a head coach. I don't see why you wouldn't think Jeff Lebby would be right back in that boat himself.
And Dimitri, I don't know the full history, and I don't have the list of first-time head coaches making their debuts in the SEC. And it's funny, this isn't even where we plan to start, but it's kind of an interesting topic. I don't have that list in front of me, but I doubt there's a lot of success there. I mean, we're seeing it right now, actually, with Shane Beamer at South Carolina, where there was some early success, but there's just going to be growing pains. And so at a place like a South Carolina, Mississippi State, like, you know, there's going to be growing pains, and it may get to a point to where, you know, maybe that guy is stubborn or the adjustments made aren't what's needed for the program. And it can become very apparent that this coach is very much in over his head. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Lebby, but it just very rarely.
But you can't rule it out, right?
Yeah, you can't rule it out. You cannot rule it out.
I mean, ironically, I think the high end of first-time head coach in the SEC is probably Dan Mullen. If it's not Dan Mullen, then maybe it's James Franklin at Vanderbilt. But what is their high end? Neither of those guys, or I think maybe Mullen one time won 10 games. I think Franklin deserves a major tip of the hat, because what he did going 9-3 one year at Vanderbilt is damn near impossible. But the low end, there are so many examples, right? I mean, Jeremy Pruitt is the most recent, but he is far from the only one of a dude that just is not ready to make that leap from coordinator to coach. And I think this is one thing that you saw a lot, and I think got a little bit more highlighted because of the way Nick Saban ran a program. It is a totally different mindset of can you call plays versus can you be that CEO?
So anyways, Mississippi State was all over your mentions, which again, we'll see what right. happens. Like you said, we'll check back in on that late November and see where the Bulldogs are. Either way, though, let's get into everything. Guys, again, like I mentioned, appreciate you all tuning in. Check us out across social media, YouTube, podcast. You already know the drill, our website as well. We're really excited to be on the Texas Sports Unfiltered platform daily. We're going to start with a little Mizzou talk, Dimitri. List of topics. Luther Burden, of course, is one of the top returning playmakers in the SEC. And the question is this, what would it take? When we talk Heisman contenders, right? And it's become such a quarterback-driven award. It's just, you're the best quarterback on the best team. That's basically what this is. But if there is a guy that can emerge and be a surprise sort of, I don't even know if a surprise is the right word, but maybe flip that narrative, upset that narrative, and win the Heisman as not a quarterback. Luther Burden at wide receiver at Mizzou could potentially do that. But what would it take for Luther Burden to win the Heisman Trophy? We're going to get into some stats of some other guys that had, you know, that had a shot to do it. But in your mind, just first reaction, when you think of a guy like Luther Burden being in New York City, hoisting the trophy, what would it take? What would have to click, not yeah. just with him, but Missouri's football team to make it a reality?
I mean, the thing is that both what is working for him is what is working against him, right? He has to prove that he is the guy that everything runs through on an offense with plenty of other weapons. I think had he stayed in the SEC, had he not transferred to Ohio State, we are talking about Quinshon Judkins as the SEC player that's not a quarterback with the best shot, because it's so much easier for a running back to rack up stats and for everybody to associate that with the running back himself. Think about the last wide receiver to win the Heisman, which was actually the last non-quarterback to win the Heisman, was Devontae Smith at Alabama. He had to lead the country in receptions, in receiving touchdowns, and in receiving yards. He also had to be a punt returner, have at least one return for a touchdown, and he had to be part of an offense that had a lot of weapons. Jalen Waddle, Najee Harris. That was the year that Mac Jones, disguised what he really is for long enough to be a Heisman contender himself. And still, there was no question who the ultimate weapon on that team is. I think you can say a lot of the same things about Burden. It's just a matter of doing it now. And, you know, can you do it in a season that does not have the cloud of COVID hanging over it to make everything so weird and unbalanced and hard to compare one for one anyway?
I think something, Dimitri, that could help him this year too is that I think Mizzou is going to be fine in the running game based off the guys they added from the portal, but you don't have Cody Schrader anymore. So I would imagine Kirby Moore and company are going to lean on that passing game more. He's got Theo Weiss Jr. to take some of the pressure off, and Brady Cook, obviously, I mean, I think should be prepared to have his best season and play his best football after a confidence building 2023. But you mentioned Devontae Smith, and I think it's a fascinating comment, by the way. You mentioned who are the non-quarterbacks in the SEC that have the best shot to win the Heisman Trophy. Again, Luther Burden's got to be up there, but what Devontae Smith did in that 2020 season, 117 catches, 1,856 yards. Granted, this isn't a 10-game season.
Exactly. I was about to say 10-game season. That.
Yeah, so 117 catches, 1,856 yards, 23 receiving touchdowns. 23. Yep. He also ran four times for 6 yards and a touchdown, by the way, so give him credit for that. You mentioned in the return game, punt return game, 11 returns for 237 yards, 21.5 yards per turn. He did have a touchdown there. That was a punt return touchdown, 4 kickoff returns for 52 yards as well. So like you mentioned, I mean, he did it in the return game as well, but like those numbers he put up at wide receiver, if Luther Burden puts anything like that up, we're talking about Mizzou. I mean, they're probably, what, 11-1? Maybe they're undefeated?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, honestly,
Yeah, they're definitely 11-1, if not undefeated. Do they have they don't have Georgia on the schedule this year, right?
They do not.
Yeah, I mean,
Missouri's schedule's wildly favorable.
I mean, what they have, we talked about this before. They have Bama, they have Oklahoma, and then after that, there are a lot of kind of toss-up games, right? Because we agree that Missouri's offense is really good. I think that defense is going to end up costing them some games, which in the long run could be what costs Burden a legitimate shot at the Heisman. Remember, all of those Bama guys that were not quarterbacks that won the Heisman all did it in years where they also won a national championship, right? Ingram in 09, Henry in 15, and then Devontae in 20. I don't know that Missouri has that in them necessarily, but you know, if we think about the way the Heisman is adjudicated, voted on, I guess I don't know a single word for that. Maybe you get some sort of groundswell of this is the best SEC candidate, because I do think that like Jalen Milroe could have a great year. Carson Beck could have a great year. Hell, Quinn Ewers could have a great year. I think that the overall state of quarterbacking in college football is probably going to take a dip from what we've seen the last two seasons, just because we don't have that one obvious or two obvious, like can't miss NFL guys. Like coming into last year, we knew Caleb Williams, Drake May, those are the class of quarterbacking in college football, right? I don't think we have that dude this year. And so there's nobody entering this campaign with overwhelming hype.
And you look at Missouri's 2024 schedule, and to your point, you know, Dimitri, what do you, there's a recipe, I think, for competing for winning a Heisman Trophy, being in the conversation. I think your team getting off to a hot start, winning a lot of games, you performing well, getting that hype going. It's as much marketing as anything, right? There's why, you know, we're probably going to see Luther Burden for Heisman.com pop up sooner rather than later. But, I mean, Mizzou is Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, Vandy is the month of September for them for bye week. At Texas A&M. At UMass, which is a weird non-conference game.
At UMass
in Amherst, Massachusetts, on Saturday, October the 12th. So,
I'm always shocked by the G5 and independent teams that convince P5 teams they have to come there. Like, I live in Raleigh. I think NC State went to Mobile to play South Alabama one year. I think it was the same year they went to Norfolk to play Old Dominion. And I always look at that and think, like, geez, have some respect for yourself.
I mean, why did Bama go to South Florida? I mean,
well, but they got a 2-for-1 deal. And, you know, that's in an NFL stadium in a fertile recruiting ground. Who are you getting out of Amherst, Massachusetts?
Very good point. Then you've got Auburn at home. And then you go to Bama end of October. And, Dimitri, I tell you, if they're 7-0, going to Bama, that could be you need the hype to get going. You need a Heisman moment. You need a Heisman moment. At Bama, could be a Heisman moment.
Yeah, and so look, that's what I was going to bring up. Like, Devontae Smith certainly had a Heisman moment with that catch in the LSU game where he contorted his body in a way that we just did not know was possible for humans. And remember, LSU was the defending national champ. Those kinds of things help to create that Heisman moment that Luther Burden would have to have if he's going to be a serious contender for this award. I truly believe, like, I don't have to quantify this. I don't have to say best player except for, or best player because blank. Like, I think Luther Burden is the best offensive player coming back in the SEC this year.
And then you look, and I agree with that, by the way, Dimitri, you look at the rest of their schedule. They've got a bye week after Bama. You know, we mentioned there's no Georgia, there's no Tennessee, there's no Ole Miss, there's no LSU. So they, after the bye week, they've got Oklahoma, at South Carolina, at Mississippi State, and Arkansas. So
I mean, no Texas either.
No Texas.
Everybody in front of them, they avoid until a trip to Atlanta if they are able to do that.
Yeah, and this is why so many are talking about, and I know, again, questions of the defense. That's another thing, too, I was thinking, Dimitri, is like, if the defense takes a step back and Mizzou has to outscore people, maybe that helps Luther Burden, at least just to pad the stats. And, you know, they're going to have to score points. I mean, they're going to have to go to somebody. Yeah. So.
For sure. Yeah. So let me ask you a question. Let's talk about the non-conference schedule, because Boston College is going to be in the polar opposite position. They are going to have to win games 5-3 this year. if Boston College, if Bill O'Brien can figure out a way to get Missouri to play their game and win that game, even if Missouri beats Alabama, even if Missouri wins every game they play in conference, is he eliminated by virtue of such a bad loss?
I think potentially. Yeah, I think so, actually. I do. Yeah, yeah. I think that type of loss puts you behind the eight ball to a point you can't recover.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think people overlook what Boston College has been capable of being throughout its history, right? But that's not what they are right now. They're also not the dregs of the ACC like we thought they were going to be. They just kind of are there. And that's not great for an SEC team to lose to.
Yeah. You mentioned, Dimitri, I think it's fascinating, non-quarterbacks, the best of the rest, if you will, the favorites to compete for the Heisman Trophy, win the Heisman Trophy, that aren't quarterbacks. Luther Burden, I would say, leads that pack. Are there a couple others? And it's. I was just thinking about it. It's kind of hard to think about. I was thinking about, like, who is the top Heisman contender that's not a quarterback on each SEC team?
Ooh.
And, that's a fun conversation maybe for another day. But, like, I'm sitting there thinking, and I'm like, it really is more than just, like, being a good player. Like, you kind of need to have, like, some flash and pizzazz, too, I think. You need to have, like, something that makes you – a national storyline, so even a guy like Carson Beck might win the Heisman, by the way, but he's kind of boring. I mean, he's just kind of a boring guy. Quinn Ewers might be kind of boring. Maybe if he had the mullet back, it might help the case. I think of a guy, I don't know, that there's not like a bunch of dudes like over at Ole Miss. Like, is Trey Harris going to be a Heisman contender? Like, I mean, is, you know,
it's
what I
interesting,
mean?
Like, right? Like, I look at some of these teams and all of those individuals are gone, right? Like, we are talking about when we talk about SEC offenses outside of the quarterbacks, because the quarterback is always a one dude position, we're talking about units, right? Like, Auburn's got a pretty good wide receiver room, but none of those guys individually stand out above everybody else in the conference. I guess maybe you would say, in terms of name recognition, I guess maybe you would say Isaiah Bond transferring from Alabama to Texas, but even still, look, I am biased because I spent 2 years wondering when the superstar we were told Isaiah Bond was going to be was going to emerge. Maybe what he needs is Quinn Ewers throwing him the ball to make that happen. But again, I go back to why the ceiling is so high for Burden to get to, or I should say the bar is so high for Burden to get to be a Heisman contender. How much can Burden or Bond or any receiver, how much can they put up in terms of yards and in terms of touchdowns that are not going to be credited to their quarterback?
That's a very good point. Yeah, that is a very good point. Burden is in a situation where, you know, again, I think fairly or unfairly, I don't think Brady Cook is going to be looked at as a Heisman guy.
That's why I think Burden has a chance, because as much as, look, there are too many Heisman voters, right? There are almost 1,000 Heisman voters across the country, and sometimes they make really dumb choices for the Heisman Trophy, but sometimes they prove to you they know what they're doing by recognizing that, okay, Mac Jones is, you know, he's deserved to be recognized as one of the 5 best players in the country, but he's not that without Devontae Smith. The bulk of the support here is going to Smith. I think Brady Cook could be in that same boat, where if Missouri has just had this amazing season and their passing game is just other level, I think there are enough voters that would recognize that Burden and Wheeze have more to do with that than Brady Cook's natural ability.
Dimitri, last year, I know this one will hit home for you, I compared Brady Cook to Connor Shaw. Do you think that's fair?
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I guess I
at least it. At least their performances last year. I know the body of work as a career is different, but last year when I watched him, I was like, this feels very Connor Shaw-esque.
Well, what's interesting is Shaw, and I think you saw this rear its head a bit more in the NFL because, you know, he was just on a roster completely devoid of talent when he was the starter at Cleveland. Like, I think that I always thought Shaw was capable of making a difference for South Carolina, but rarely was he asked to, right? And I think that's probably who Brady Cook is going to be the whole time he's at Missouri.
Yeah, was on great teams for sure. I mean, we think of Jadeveon Clowney, Alshon Jeffrey, Marcus Lattimore. Same thing with Cook, with the cast of characters he got around him. Going to be interesting to see what Luther Burden can do this year. Again, I think either way, whether he's in Heisman contention or not, he's going to be one of the best playmakers in the SEC yet again. I mean, what he did last year, it was at one point, I think we were at like 7 consecutive 100-yard games or 8 or something like that. He was absolutely incredible, and he's got Theo Weiss next to him. So they're going to be a lot of fun to watch offensively. Demetri, let's keep it moving. And I had not seen this article, by the way, until you sent it over. So ESPN puts out a story, and of course, it's the quote-unquote offseason, although our good friend Josh Pate refuses to say that word. It is the college football offseason, at least right now. It's crazy, by the way, Demetri. Upcoming, I was thinking about this today, and I actually heard the Athlon guys talking about, we're not getting the preseason magazine this year until like early June because of the portal. The craziness.
Stephen Godfrey, who used to write for them, now he hosts the Split Zone Duo podcast. I've heard him for years talk about that some of the stuff that was just like, okay, I can be gathering this stuff throughout the year, and then in the offseason, I can put this section together very quickly, is invalid for that reason now. Not just the portal, but look at how late, whether you're talking about Alabama and Michigan, two of the four best teams last year, or you're talking about Boston College near the very bottom, look at how late teams are changing entire coaching staffs. Like, the calendar is just extended in a way we never used to see before.
Yeah, the calendar is a complete mess for sure. And so over the next couple weeks, we've got, again, like I mentioned, preseason magazine season. We're going to have SEC Media Days. This is all football related, obviously. We've got baseball stuff upcoming. But SEC Media Days, the video game is dropping, which is just as big a deal as anything. And then, of course, we'll get into fall camp. But so we're all talking college football, different things. ESPN puts out an article, spring overreactions from each way too early top 25 college football team. Ironically enough, the picture they use in this article is of Texas quarterback Quinn Ewers. But your issue, Demetri, with this article was what?
Well, Quinn Ewers is a part of it, and it's because they took two of the teams that we think are going to be among the five best in the SEC, Alabama and Texas, and their overreaction is there's a quarterback controversy. I don't know anybody, any Texas fan that thinks Arch Manning is going to usurp Ewers going into this season. I don't know any Alabama fan that thinks Ty Simpson is going to usurp Jalen Milroe going into this season. There are questions about both of those teams. There are legitimate questions about both of those teams. I don't think this felt very much like it's talking season, let's create a headline more than anything, because I do think Ewers' experience and Ewers' chemistry with his offense is what makes Texas one of the favorites to win the national championship this year. There is so much returning for that team, and to have the leader along, the emotional leader, along with all of the statistical achievers on that team is why I believe in them over Georgia in the SEC.
And to your point, Demetri, and I'm not going to knock the guys too bad, because I get it. It is talking season, and
sure,
we all do things in content, right? Well, you know, everybody knows about a tease, if you will, right? A good lead in to get people interested. Right. But for Texas, they say their overreaction, there's a quarterback controversy, and then this is the first paragraph. Arch Manning electrified a stadium, plenty of fans wearing his number 16 jersey during the spring game, throwing for 355 yards and 3 touchdowns, looking in command and locked in on deep passes all day, while Quinn Ewers threw a pick six on one of his two drives. But there's no controversy. So right there, within the first paragraph, they are contradicting themselves, saying that I guess what they're saying is like, this is an overreaction and we don't even agree with it, but this is what people will come out of spring saying, which it's just, it kind of speaks to Demetri, like overreacting to a spring game is just, it's a bad idea. It's just, it's a bad idea.
To me, the overreaction, like the overreaction for Bama fans that I think is worth talking about is all of the people that think, oh, well, we saw the spring game, huge problems on defense. They're not going to be able to stop anybody this year. When Kalen DeBoer outright said the point of defense is not to stop anybody in this game. It is, you know, to make sure we have the X's and O's, you know, the most basic elements of playing defense down. We're not going to put anything on film for our opponents right now. That's an overreaction. You were talking about two of the four playoff teams, right? Mm-hmm. I think that both Washington and Michigan would prefer to be in Alabama and Texas's quarterback situations. The other part of this, and I spent a lot of the early season last year saying this to Bama fans, And I think Texas fans need to be reminded of this sometimes. Not all of them. I know a lot of you guys are really smart and follow the team really well. Remember, Arch Manning was the third string quarterback last year. When Quinn Ewers went down, they turned to Malik Murphy. And what I said to my friends that are Bama fans in the early part of the season when Jalen Milroe was kind of on shaky ground was that if Ty Simpson were better, Ty Simpson would be playing. If Arch Manning were a better option when Quinn Ewers went down, Malik Murphy would not have been playing. These coaches are not in the business of scoring, you know, social media credit. They are not trying to play favorites. They are trying to win football games. There is no controversy, and it is insane we are even pretending like there is one for the sake of getting a few clicks.
Demetri, that's always made me laugh because I know you've seen it on social media, and this happens with every team, but there are folks that really believe that these coaches play favorites and this.
Oh, sure.
And it happens a lot with the quarterback position. Obviously, it happens a lot with meddling programs who seem to struggle, and there's always a, you know, the backup quarterback's the most popular guy on campus. But to your point, that, like, I've called coaches idiots before. I'd call for their jobs, like, but like, I refuse to believe that guys are playing favorites when, you know, they knowingly have a guy on the bench that's better, and they're like, I just actually like this other guy. Like, they're not losing games to play favorites. Nobody's doing that.
No, look, I truly believe it. I know Alabama struggled in that game, but I truly believe the reason that Jalen Milroe was benched for the South Florida game was Nick Saban's way of saying, do you see now? Why don't you just shut up and let me coach this team? Do you see now why he's the starting quarterback? It would be hard to convince me that is not the case, considering, like, we never really got a good reason why Jalen Milroe could not have come into that game when everyone else was playing like absolute dog shit. You're right. These guys are good at what they do. In the case of Texas, you know, they have a head coach that I think any quarterback in the country would want to play for, right? Mm-hmm. I think that you have to trust that not only when a guy like Sark has his starter coming back, does he feel good, but he's probably going to show you a little bit more of what that kid can do because he spent a year. Now, in this case, he spent 2 years building up his faith in Quinn Ewers.
Demetri, let's do this if you don't mind. Let's go through each of the overreactions in this ESPN article for the SEC team specifically. You just tell me, simply put, do you think it's a fair gripe or maybe a legitimate concern or nothing to worry about? Okay,
yeah.
Let's do that. Right. So we'll start with Georgia. Their overreaction is Georgia's offense won't be nearly as good without star tight end Brock Bowers and receiver Ladd McConkie. Is that fair or unfair in your opinion as a spring overreaction?
Oh, I think that's a very fair thing to worry about. Remember that we thought Brock Bowers, we knew Brock Bowers was really good, right? But we thought he might have been otherworldly because of that rotation of three tight ends that Georgia had. And he showed last year, no, he's just a really special dude at tight end. McConkie, they've had the little white athletic wide receiver, like one leaves and another one is ready to go. I don't think the passing game is in huge trouble, but I think a talent like Brock Bowers does not, that's not just a plug in the next guy kind of guy to replace.
Georgia's version of Hunter Renfrow, I was going to say.
Yes, exactly.
Just pesky. What do they say? The white wide receivers. He's
the future he's really, New England Patriots Hall of Famer.
Well, yeah. The scouting report is he's a team player. He's a team player. He's smart. You know, he plays hard. He's a dog. You know,
that's right. Gym rat.
He's a gym rat.
Last one out.
I would say it's a legitimate concern, Demetri, from the standpoint of I think the wide receiver room could actually be better, like top to bottom.
Interesting.
But because of Dominic Lovett, Ra-Ra Thomas, Bell, like, they have dudes. And I think Oscar Delp at tight end is a legitimate NFL body. So, like, I'm not worried about the talent, but go back and watch that Auburn game if you have not done so. Like, it's one thing to have talent. It's another thing to have a guy like Brock Bowers making plays in those types of situations. He won them that Auburn game. Like,
oh yeah,
making those clutch catches down the stretch. And so it's like, it's one thing to be a really talented player, to be a guy out there, but are you a dude? Like, are you the dude that when things get tough, you're down 3 points in the fourth quarter, like there's that thing that separates certain guys. You know what I mean? And so like, we don't know if somebody else on that roster has it. That's the big question I have.
Yeah. I mean, that Auburn game, there was a sequence in the third quarter where they were going to Bowers, I think four passes.
He was unguardable.
Yeah. I was going to say, one of them, they needed, it was a third and 11. And it was almost like Bowers knew, I've just got to get 11.1 yards. And that's like exactly what he got to keep the trade rolling. But yeah, that reliability does not come along every day.
So, Dimitri, we just talked Texas overreaction. There's a quarterback controversy. You and I both agree there was not. Quinn Ewers is the guy. Great position to have Arch Manning as the backup. I would, by the way, Dimitri, side note, I'd say it's the best quarterback room in the country with those two.
Probably.
Guys. I mean,
yeah, I think mean, that's it's hard to argue.
Yeah.
That's hard to argue. Maybe Ohio State is the only one that you can kind of put in the same conversation. I think that some people may argue USC. I would argue they have a lot of highly rated quarterbacks. I don't even think Lincoln Riley can tell you what exactly they have, though.
Yeah. So, moving on from Texas. Ole Miss. Okay, here's a fun one. The overreaction is there's no such thing as rat poison, quote unquote. And let me give some context, because this one can be kind of confusing. This is what they say. First of all, Lane Kiffin knows better. He's repeated the phrase often after hearing his former boss, Nick Saban, lament what rat poison could do to a football team that gets too full of itself after reading its press clippings. Not since the John Vaught years has Ole Miss received this kind of love going into a season. So basically they're talking about there's no such thing as rat poison. It doesn't matter. And you're a Nick Saban guy, Demetri. You're a Bama guy. Fair or unfair to say that Lane Kiffin is maybe milking the rat poison thing and there's like no validity to it?
It's interesting. I think that Lane Kiffin very much is susceptible to the rat poison. So I think it's a very fair concern. I don't think he's susceptible to it in the way that he gets painted. I think that's old Lane. I think new Lane now, especially Saban, has been his ultimate stumbling block, even in years when Ole Miss was really, really good. I could see Lane getting tripped up by not feeling like there is anything left in front of him, not feeling like there's anything left that could stop him.
I think it's fair, too, to your point.
Look, man, losing Quinshon Judkins is going to change that offensive attack. I don't mean that they're going to throw out the playbook, but there are going to be things that your opponent is now better prepared for because they don't have to be allotting one or two guys just to shadow Judkins in the backfield.
Dimitri, let's go to Mizzou. They are next up, by the way. And just to give you guys the rankings, by the way, Georgia number one in the way too early top 25. Texas, excuse me, at number four, Ole Miss at six. So this is Mizzou at seven. Their overreaction is, and let me remind you all, by the way, Mizzou did not tackle in their spring game. Right. The overreaction is the offensive line could hold back the offense. Fair or unfair, Demetri?
This is tough because Mizzou has had a history of putting together really talented, really coordinated offensive lines. That being said, I don't know enough about what is still there. Obviously, they lost Javon Foster. That was an NFL level body. I know they worked the portal really hard. I got to be honest, Chris. I got to kind of plead ignorance on this one.
I will say they just need Caden Green from Oklahoma to be that dude that they think he's going to be. They also got Marcus Bryant from SMU. But to your point, they lost three guys. Foster, the leading one. He was all SEC at tackle. Xavier Delgado, Marcellus Johnson. I'm going to say this is a little bit of an overreact. It truly is an overreaction, though. I think it's a little bit unfair. Also, too, I'll say because they weren't even tackling in the spring. I don't think you can watch that and determine that the offensive line is going to be some major eyesore. Questions for sure, but I thought they did a really good job. And they've got three returning starters, plus Green, plus Bryant. I think the offensive line is going to be fine. Let's go to Bama at nine. Again, the overreaction, quarterback controversies brewing. You and I both agree. This was, Dimitri, this was actually one funny enough, though. When we broke down the Bama spring game, I asked my co-host at the time, do you think there's a quarterback controversy? Because you look at Jalen Milroe's stats, right? Three for nine. He wasn't very good. He was missing the intermediate throw. I definitely, like, here's the thing with this one. Not only is Jalen Milroe the most talented of the group, and Ty Simpson looked good in the spring game.
Yeah, he looked great.
But DeBoer has stated many times, and I think one of the biggest challenges for a new head coach is winning the locker room, winning the buy-in. Obviously, it's a bunch of guys you didn't recruit. They're not necessarily your guys. And so I think going away from Jalen Milroe would – it could fracture that locker room. And so I think that's why you've seen him early on say, hey, Jalen Milroe's our leader. You know, he's basically referenced him as the heart and soul of the football team. And I think that's probably earned him a lot of goodwill and galvanized that locker. So I think for really those reasons, obviously Jalen Milroe is very talented, but I think that's a big reason why you go with him.
Yeah, 100% agree. I would also add, go watch what Jalen Milroe did best last year and then go watch Washington and tell me this is not a match made in heaven. I mean, it is. It is. Like, Milroe, your criticism is fair. Like, if Milroe really thinks he's an NFL prospect after this year, he's got to get better at that intermediate passing game, because that's not going to fly at the next level to be that off on the timing. But whether it was Ryan Grubb or Kalen DeBoer, they like to throw deep. And if there is one thing that Jalen Milroe does better than anything else, it is the bomb. Like, they are built to work together.
Dimitri, let's keep it moving. Number 12 are the LSU Tigers, and the overreaction, this one's interesting. The overreaction is DBU is back. Now, let me also give you this context. LSU ranked 108th in pass defense last year, 108th in total defense. They revamped their secondary, obviously, and those guys were on the field in the spring game. Is it fair or unfair, though, to say after the spring game that DBU is back in Baton Rouge?
It's tough, right? Because they also brought in they're running a whole new defensive playbook with Blake Baker this year. I think they have the talent. So in that aspect, I do think it is unfair to say it's an overreaction. But to your point, did you ever, as an SEC fan, think you would see an LSU team that could not stop anybody? I mean, I certainly didn't.
I mean, that was a historically bad deal. And I think the thing that could wreck their secondary, by the way, what's a secondary's best friend? A pass rush, a good defensive line. And LSU, we'll see if they add any more. I mean, they're running out of time to add other bodies. It could be a struggle up front, which is weird to say because I feel like LSU, I'm so used to them being so talented up front. But if that group struggles, it's going to make that secondary look a lot worse. So
it's tough, right? That defensive line has to do so much to make everything else click because we saw last year, Harold Perkins is otherworldly good, but not if he does not have someone creating holes for him. He is not designed to be that guy rushing off the edge. They need a defensive line to open up the strength of the rest of their defense, which honestly is everywhere else this year.
So, Dimitri, let's move to the next one. It's the Tennessee Volunteers.
I think you skipped Oklahoma at 14, right?
Oh, I did skip. Good call. Oh, you know why? There's a picture with their name. I think that threw me off a little bit. And it's a picture of Dylan Gabriel. So I was sitting here thinking about Oregon. Yes, at 14, the Oklahoma Sooners. The overreaction for Oklahoma is this. The Sooners' offensive line will be their undoing. Dimitri, fair or unfair?
Unfair, because I think there is so much that could be that team's undoing. certainly their offensive line is not what it was when Lincoln Riley was there. Like, for all of Lincoln Riley's flaws, he found really good offensive line prospects and let the offensive line coaches do their job. I don't love Oklahoma. I've told you that. I don't love Oklahoma this year. I don't think that I could right now look at that roster, though, and go, oh, definitely the O-line is the problem. They're also bringing in an inexperienced quarterback. So if sacks go up, who's to say that is absolutely on the offensive line?
Questions on the line of scrimmage, questions at quarterback, that is not typically a recipe for success in the SEC. And I'll tell you this, Oklahoma, and I know Texas fans don't want to hear about them, but Oklahoma is going to be fascinating because – all offseason, I think folks are going to spend their time talking about how mid Oklahoma's going to be. I'll be curious, like, how they respond. Because I tell you this, Oklahoma beats Tennessee in week three, something like that.
Their
first SEC game. Oklahoma beats Tennessee. That game's in Norman, too. All of a sudden, you know, because this is a great program historically. It's a program we expect to win. So I think the perception for a program like Oklahoma, it can literally flip overnight. If they were to win that game against Tennessee, we're like, oh, okay, this is actually Oklahoma football. Whoops, our bad. So
yeah, I mean, it's possible. Look, they go on. They do have a couple of
tough SEC non-conference road games. They got tough non-conference too. I think Tulane is one of them. I think
Tulane and Houston are.
Yeah,
both
those are tough. Those are tough.
Those aren't easy. That's for sure. And look, they go to Ole Miss. They go to Missouri. But I think they get Tennessee at home, they get Texas at home, they get Alabama at home. I think they have a pretty advantageous breakdown of their conference schedule. I'm not changing my mind. I'm still not an Oklahoma believer, but I understand your point. Like, I do understand your point that if they knock off Tennessee in their first SEC game, we could be looking at this team very differently.
I think what Oklahoma especially, and Texas isn't quite there because they are one of the best teams in the country, but I think what some of our new SEC brethren have to get used to as well is, like, you can sit here for 15 minutes and talk about a team and say, man, that team's got this guy and that guy. They're going to be a really solid club. They're going to be one of the best 7-5 teams in the country. That is such a real conversation. And, like, yeah. I think Oklahoma fans, they're just not, like, you know, I'm sitting here talking about, yeah, going 8-4. And, like, for OU, it's like, I mean, we win double-digit games every year. But it's like, hey, you're going to be a really good 7-5 or 8-4 team. I don't think they're quite used to that convo, you know what I mean? So
yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. For sure. I mean, listen, welcome to not having Kansas on your schedule every year.
Indeed. Again, at 16. Okay, so the Tennessee Volunteers, the overreaction, Nico for Heisman. I think this is one that this is one we've been hearing since the Iowa bowl game, honestly.
Yeah.
Fair, unfair, the overreaction being Nico for Heisman after the spring game.
I think it's fair that that's an overreaction. That Nico Iamaliava, man, I used to have it. Like, I used to know exactly how to pronounce it. I think the fact that, like, the idea that he could be a difference maker and he could end up as one of the two or three best quarterbacks in this conference, I don't think that's unfair at all.
Let's move to Kentucky at number 23, Dimitri, because sticking with the Heisman Trophy conversation, the overreaction, fair, unfair in your mind, new quarterback Brock Vandegrift is a sleeper Heisman Trophy candidate.
I mean, again, I go back to there's a reason he didn't play at Georgia, right? That doesn't mean he can't play. Like, Zach Mettenberger didn't get on the field at Georgia, and he turned out to be pretty darn good for LSU. I also don't believe that any Kentucky quarterback is going to be put in a position to be a star and win a Heisman. It's different being J.J. McCarthy on a national championship Michigan team to get a Heisman invite than it is at Kentucky, where you're probably going to be a 3-loss team at best.
And I think, too, Dimitri, you would have to do so much more at a school like Kentucky that is not a blue blood, admittedly. Like, yeah. I just – to get the credit, right?
Think about the two guys that we have seen win Heismans as quarterbacks, not at blue blood programs in recent years. Robert Griffin III, Lamar Jackson, those guys had to have undeniably generationally special seasons in order to get that. I can't see that happening with Vandegrift.
The one thing I'll say about Brock Vandegrift, there's two things. Number one, talking to Kentucky folks, if you have not seen a lot of hype from Kentucky like this spring, mm-hmm. That is on purpose because Devin Leary, I mean, they hype. I mean, and again, you're right there in Raleigh. Yeah. You're very familiar with Devin Leary. They hype this guy up endlessly, and he was trash last year for most of the year. So I think they're keeping more of a low profile. Good thing for Vandegrift. And he's still got Berrion Brown and Dane Key on the outside. So I think he could have a big year. Heisman is too much, but a big year, I think he could.
Here's the other thing that, like, I guess you can't dismiss the idea of Heisman, because if he has a big year, he's going to be on some big stages. Kentucky's schedule, like, Georgia's on there, Ole Miss is on there, Tennessee is on there, Texas is on there. Like, this is – plus they play Louisville every single year, who, look, they weren't good, but they were in the conference championship game last year, and Kentucky beat them. Like, there are going to be opportunities to show off. If he's having that kind of season, there will be opportunities that he's on ABC. He's on ESPN in primetime.
Dimitri, let's get to our final one here at number 25. We just mentioned, let's let Texas A&M overachieve. Well, they're not going to get the chance because they're 25th in the way too early top 25, whatever that means. The overreaction is, and fair, unfair, Dimitri, the Aggies lost too much in the portal to win in Mike Elko's first year.
I mean, my belief is that we really don't know what losing too much in the portal or killing it in the portal really equates to in college football quite yet. So I don't, but I also don't think it's an overreaction. Here's like the answer is I don't know, because on the one hand, I don't know what it means to lose too much in the portal. On the other hand, like, they have to improve from last year. But on the other hand, you're losing all these guys in the portal, but like, what are you losing? Look at what they were when they were all together in College Station. It's not like you lost that much, really.
And that's what's, Dimitri, so tough for me for A&M. And just listing off some of the names, by the way, Evan Stewart went to Oregon. Walter Nolan went to Ole Miss. LT Overton went to Bama. Fadil Diggs went to Syracuse. They did pick up guys like Nick Scorton from Purdue. So, like, they reloaded in the portal for sure. But this is what I come back to, where it's like, and this isn't a fair way to judge or make predictions. And I will fully acknowledge that when I predict A&M this summer, that each team is different. This is a new era. I get it. But I'm like, why can't we just let A&M overachieve? Like,
yeah,
let's just, like, there's going to be so many people. Like, it is just the sexy thing to do to pick A&M to win 9 or 10 games. Undeservingly so. They have not won double-digit games since Johnny Manziel was at quarterback. Like,
yeah,
let's just give them a chance to, like, you know, because not all 8-4s are built equally, right? Like, if you're setting the bar at 9 or 10 wins, 8-4 is a massive disappointment versus, like, if we're saying, hey, year one of Mike Elko, just get to a bowl game. And then you go 8-4, like, you've overachieved. I don't know.
Yeah, and look, the other thing, too, to keep in mind, and you could say this is completely tied to Jimbo and not the program itself, but, like, some of the guys there that have been – that we've seen in SEC competition really change games – Devon Achain, Anaya Smith, those guys went all the way through, right? They left A&M for the NFL, and they didn't make much of a difference one way or the other. Evan Stewart is the guy I think they are going to miss the most, but I don't look at that roster of guys they lost and think, oh, it's just going to be a different A&M team. Like, they, since the Manziel day, certainly since the Kevin Sumlin days, they just seem like a crapshoot every year. I believe whatever you tell me about it.
Dimitri, in closing, this has been an electric show, by the way. And guys, leave us your thoughts, your comments. We'll get to those throughout the show. Let's get to our final topic of the day. CBS Sports, my good friend, our good friend, actually, Brad Crawford of 24/7 wrote this article talking the top jobs, the best coaching jobs in 2024 and beyond in college football. And of course, the SEC well represented. By the way, before we get into that, Dimitri, I do want to tell you, I talked with Brad actually this morning, saw his piece, shot him a text. And I said, hey, great read, man. You know what would be funny is if you did top 10 worst Power 5 jobs, LOL. Little Birdie told me, a.k.a. Brad, that article is coming next week.
Oh, yeah.
So you guys might. And here's a spoiler. There may or may not be an SEC job in that top 10 list. I think you can guess which one it is.
Can I ask you, is there any crossover with this list? Because there are a couple on this list that I could see you making the argument both ways for.
Now, that would be interesting. He didn't mention that, but okay. And there were a couple, by the way, if you read this article, and again, it's a fantastic piece from Brad Crawford, a really fun, like, off-season piece, of course. Mm-hmm. The best coaching jobs. There were a couple just outside the top 10. I thought it was interesting, by the way, Dimitri. Tennessee was on there. Auburn was on there. You think Auburn's a top 10 job? Like, that's one of those, to your point. It is a top 10 best and worst. Because I have heard, like, Auburn is a school, you can go there and do it all. You can win a national title. Like, they're going to give you the resources. I have heard nightmare stories about Auburn, though. Like, red tape is a thing in the coaching world where red tape is like, hey, there's certain things you can't – I mean, I've heard stories about a coach was going to go there, but it's like he was told, you got to keep this coordinator and that. They're telling the head coach what he can do before he even gets there. So, like, that's one of those I think you could put in the top 10 of both. Like, it's a great potential, but it can be a nightmare.
A former Auburn coach one time told me that you want the job – because nothing makes you richer than getting fired by Auburn. Like, they just do not know how to write a contract to their advantage by any stretch. No, here's the thing, right? Like, they, very similar to your Gamecocks with Clemson, like, they feel very inferior to the other school in the state. And now they feel very inferior not only to their top rival, but their secondary rival as well, right? So they are always going to overspend. They are always going to listen to what the head coach wants. But, you know, any school, all right, this is a truth about me. Any school whose slogan either involves the words family or all in, I'm wary of for exactly what you just talked about. There's going to be a lot of, oh, well, you can't fire the offensive line coach. His daddy was Pat Dye's offensive line coach. Like, that's not how you build a successful program. but the money is there, right? And that's going to be such a big part of this going forward, is who will fork out the cash.
Just missing the top 10 as well, Dimitri. I knew there was one SEC team I missed. Florida, just outside the top 10. That feels like another one that's kind of best. It could be best and worst because of the pressures. I think they're also kind of, like, they're just starting to catch up facility wise, which is hard to believe. But
In Spurrier's day, he was very open about not needing to play the facilities game because they're in Florida. Well, everyone else in Florida started playing the facilities game, and now they're behind the eight ball. That program to me is the one that has done the biggest 180 in the last 12, 13 years. Because remember, when they hired Will Muschamp, there were a lot of people that were talking about he is giving up the best job in America for the second best job in America. And yeah, whether it was facilities, whether it was the fact that, you know, just like the waters off the coast of Florida, like the state in terms of high school talent was overfished, like the state itself, the state flagship university, couldn't keep up. There are a lot of reasons it's done a bit of a 180.
So, Dimitri, looking at the actual top 10 list, again, there's six of the top 10, four of the top five in Brad Crawford's top 10 are from the SEC. Georgia at one, Texas at two, Ohio State at three, LSU four, Bama five, Oregon six, Oklahoma seven, Florida State eight, Michigan nine, and Texas A&M. Again, Texas A&M getting incredible amounts of love at number 10. Your thoughts on the six that made Brad Crawford's top 10?
I think that LSU should be number one with a bullet. I think that the amount of NFL caliber talent in the state of Louisiana, all of whom in their lifetime have seen LSU become this monster, is a big difference maker.
And they all grow up wanting to go to LSU.
Exactly. And look, I mean, that's a testament to Nick Saban. That was not the case. When I was in college, my freshman year, we played LSU. LSU was trying to win just to get bowl eligible in that game. And that used to be the standard for LSU. It is not anymore. I think that when you have these entities like LSU, like Georgia, you could put Tennessee on this list where they are heavy with blue chip caliber talent and the majority of the state all roots for one team. That's a really great job to have. LSU boosters have shown they don't always have patience, right? Like the last, two coaches have both won national championships and both been fired. But the last three coaches there have won national championships. You can't say that about Georgia. You can't say that about Texas. You can't say that about Alabama. So LSU would be my number one, but I do think all four schools that made the top five belong on this list for sure. I actually don't love Oklahoma for the future in the SEC. I think LSU being in the conference makes it a little more difficult. And I just don't like A&M at all as a job. Like, they wouldn't even be on my radar. I would put Auburn above.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A&M literally makes this top 10 because of money. And I thought our good friend Ty Richardson, he just did a convo with our other good friend, Mike Bratton of that SEC podcast.
But
we like everybody. Yeah. We're friends with everybody. We look forward to the day when SEC Unfiltered gets in a Drake Kendrick Lamar-esque type of beef here. It's all good and fun, but Ty Richardson, he hates Texas A&M. He's an Arkansas guy. It's hilarious. Yeah. But he literally said, like, A&M is just, they're another example of you cannot throw money at a problem and fix it. And I mean, yeah, they have endless amount of resources and money, but like, what has it gotten you? So, I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know that, to your point, I don't know that putting them in the top 10, I don't think I'd have them in the top 10. I would put Tennessee above Texas A&M in the top 10. Absolutely. Yeah.
I put Florida above Texas A&M in the top 10. I'll tell you one outside of the SEC that I think is really interesting on here because of the way it's worded in 2024 and beyond. Phil Knight is not a young man. What is the Oregon job without Phil Knight throwing money at national championships?
That is a very good point. And what's the ceiling for Oregon is my question. I wonder what that ceiling is.
Look, I remember being 12 years old was the first time that I remember them making the Rose Bowl. And that was just so like outside of the realm of what you expected, right? Like that was back when, you could basically count on USC and Michigan or USC and Ohio State in the Rose Bowl every year. And that was before Phil Knight got serious about, I think this program can win a college football national championship. I don't see why you wouldn't think it's possible for them to fall back into that.
Do you think going to the Big Ten helps or hurts them going forward?
Well, it helps in the new landscape of college football because you've got to be with one of the two conferences getting the major payout. I think they are the best team in the Big Ten this year. I think that, you could make the argument for them or Ohio State to me as being the best team in the Big Ten this year, and I would listen. And I think that starts them out on the right foot. Like, I think that's really important that they are not going in at a time when USC has their shit together. It is at least stepped in front of them. Right now, there's no reason Oregon cannot sustain. They've got the best coach. They've got, all of the best talent coming from the West Coast. They've got an exciting program kids still want to be a part of. I think there are a lot of advantages there. I just got to see, what the reality is in a week in, week out Big Ten schedule. But that being said, let's not pretend like Northwestern isn't going to be on that schedule, right?
Yeah, but teaser. Speaking of the worst Power Five jobs, just hint, hint. finally, you look at Georgia and Texas at the top. Do you have any issues with Georgia being ahead of Texas when it comes to the best coaching jobs 2024 and beyond?
No, and I think Texas fans will agree with me when I say this. Georgia fans are still in their grateful period right now, right? The boosters still just want to let Kirby have whatever he wants and let him do it the way he wants to do it right now. Listen, this is coming from an Alabama fan, Texas fans. I speak your same language. I live your same pain. At some point, good is not going to be good enough, and then we can have the conversation. But right now, I think you want Georgia over Texas without a second thought.
Dimitri, an electric show today. Any closing remarks from you in regards to anything I feel like we discussed a ton today, but great off-season content day.
For sure.
Great off-season content
day. I guess the one thing I do want to say is like I'll circle back to where we began. My questions about Luther Burden being able to win a Heisman are not me trying to downplay it. I think the most exciting seasons are when a wide receiver wins the Heisman. I want to see Luther Burden succeed. I just think it's very tough to do.
I'm excited to watch the competition between Isaiah Bond and Luther Burden for who is the SEC top receiver. I think it's probably going to be those two guys. I'm pumped to watch it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I got to say, if Isaiah Bond goes to Texas and he like never drops a pass, I'm going to be so pissed off.
Guys, appreciate you all tuning in. Like I mentioned, the SEC Unfiltered Hour. We are live right here, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern, each and every single day, 3 to 4 Central, of course, Monday through Friday. And again, we appreciate the folks over at Texas Sports Unfiltered. Make sure you check them out, subscribe, all that good stuff, and do the same with our content as well. For Dimitri Urbanus, I'm Chris Phillips. We appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch you tomorrow on Texas Sports Unfiltered. Go ahead.
I do just want to make sure every time I am on, we acknowledge my favorite city in Texas and say 2-3 Mountain for the good people of El Paso.
2-3 Mountain for the good people of El Paso. Y'all take care.